Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors, and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of The Thunder Heist, and I am joined by my co-hosts, starting with Michael R. Fletcher.
Greetings, I am Michael R. Fletcher, author of the Obsidian Path series. Woo!
And Rob J. Hayes.
Hello, I'm Rob J. Hayes, author of the Mortal Technique books.
And we are joined once again by the wonderful Will White. Will, thanks for coming back to the show.
The wonderful and other adjectives that begin in W, Will White. Hi, I'm Will White. I'm the author of the Cradle series, and that is what allows me to be on podcasts like this one.
That's it. That and your stunning
books. I just realized you are our first ever repeat guest, you know.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. Yes.
Yeah, he is. Woo. Wow. Oh, that's a big milestone. We need to like have a little certificate that we can mail out to you. I think that'd
that's
be cool.
That's right. Yeah, just a little sticker.
I survived the Wizards, Warriors, and Words podcast twice.
We need to just string W's together. It's Will White and the wonderful Wizards, Warriors, and Words. Just whoa.
Oh, God, the alliteration, it hurts.
That's right.
Like someone's dyslexically tried to type in an internet address and put way too many W's.
Just kept going. You just leaned on the W key.
Fantastic. So if you're just joining us for this episode, this is the second part of a 2-part discussion with Will. And to make things even more confusing, he came on a few months ago for another 2-part discussion, which you can look back through the podcast feed and find it there. So I thought I'd kick off with a question that could either be really easy or really hard. Will, good. What would you say is
42.
Your 42? Thank you for answering the meaning of life. Fantastic. Yep. What would you say is your greatest strength as a writer? And what would you say is your greatest weakness as a writer?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to answer that question, I think. One of the things I can answer with some of my general strengths and weaknesses, I think maybe I'll find my way to a better answer over the course of rambling. But I found out one of the things we talked about last week, if I can stretch my memory back that far, is we talked about getting feedback and learning to give and receive feedback. And one of the things you learn during that process is you kind of learn what your strengths and weaknesses are. And one of the things I learned was one of my weaknesses is interiority. It's getting close to the character's thoughts in narrative as you're writing the scene. I had a very easy time describing characters in an emotionally rich way from the outside in. From the inside out, I had a much more difficult time with that. So that is something that I'm constantly working on. I'm always working to improve that. And now what I'm trying to work on is improving that without sacrificing pacing. So one of the things I think I do well as an author, and I think I started off with a general predilection for this, but it's writing smoothly. It's writing something that carries you through easily. It's not overwritten. The prose is minimalized, and it's something that is easy to read, snappy, quick to read. And I like that because that's what I like to read. So I think I just, when I'm imitating styles. I'm imitating people who are easy to read. I'm Brandon Sanderson, Matthew Stover, people like that, where it's the prose flows really, really quickly. And so typically I think that's one of my stronger suits. I also think that one of the things I tend to do well is I try to focus on delivering exactly the story I would want to read. So, and no more. So it's I want it boiled down to the bone. I've said recently now with the Wheel of Time show airing, the Wheel of Time is one of the biggest influences on my style. You wouldn't think so because I don't write at all like that, but it was one of the biggest influences because Wheel of Time was my favorite fantasy series growing up. And yet I would recommend it to people. And there's so many books and they're so long and they go into such excruciating detail about cultural stuff and how to weave rugs and whatever that turns people off. They get lost. They don't keep reading. They drop it. And so when I boil it down to the core story elements and I tell people the story, they think it sounds awesome. And then they go to read it and they didn't. So therefore I was like, when I write, what I want to do is write that the story boiled down to its core elements. So I think that's strong. And I think that's something I do naturally well. However, I also think there's a clear shadow side to that, that I also fall into, which is you tend to sometimes throw the baby out with the bathwater. It tends to be I'm cutting too close to the bone. There's definitely some more stuff that what I see as necessary, I can later go back in and go, there were some other things that would have been necessary to make this emotional impact stronger. So I lose sight of that sometimes. And I think that's both a strength and a weakness.
Yeah, fair enough. Good response. Have you been watching the Wheel of Time show so far?
I have. Yeah. I watched episode 5 last night, which because it has multiple people working on it, I can criticize it. I did not like episode 5 at all. Really didn't.
No spoilers, please. Haven't seen episode 5 yet.
Okay. Well, this is going to, I'm going to spoil this very minor point for you so that you can be prepared for it, as I was not. There is an extensive storyline with a random warder who's not in the books, and we get to see his whole backstory and whatever. And it's every time you think it's not going to be a scene with him, it is. And they keep cutting back to him and he doesn't matter at all. And I have no clue why we keep doing it. It's a complete waste of time. So I think that was a poor decision. I think whoever decided what scenes should be in last night's episode did not do as well as they should have done. I think they made a mistake.
But will he actually be a character who is important in the show? Because if there's one thing that the adaptations like Game of Thrones taught us, it's that you can always find time for prostitutes.
I would be very surprised if he was a major character going forward from this episode.
Okay.
So yeah, did not like episode 5. However, the rest of the series I've been on board for. There was some other stuff that happened in episode 5. The part that actually did focus on the main characters was good. I liked it. I liked a lot of whoever's playing Eamon Valda. I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head, but it's just absolutely killing it. And so I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the books. It's actually feeling like I'm enjoying the movie, the show. It's feeling like the books is what I meant to say.
Cool. Yeah. Cause didn't think much of the first episode personally, cause I thought the pacing was a bit difficult, which is understandable.
Agreed.
There's a lot to go across, but then episodes 2 through 4 have just been amazing. So yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
I agree.
I've only read the first Wheel of Time book as well. So yeah, it's kind of nice.
Well, you're still right there. You still know what happens. So
yes, that's true.
In the future episodes, do they keep using the thing, which frankly, I think they've done once or twice in every episode so far, where the main characters run somewhere and then the bad guys chasing them stop for some reason? I like, they've done it twice with Trollocs, in 2 episodes, twice with Trollocs and once with the wolves. I'm like, really?
They did it twice in one episode.
Like how many times are you going to use this one trope? Like
the wolves
make in the first couple episodes. Like,
I thought the first episode was definitely the weakest until last night. And then now it's in contention, but the reason I thought that is because really it doesn't like get going until episode 2, and then in episode 2 that happens twice. I don't think it happens again. I don't recall that, but at the very least one of them was like from a magical cursed city. I was like, all right, that one kind of makes sense, like it's a curse, right?
I can get away with it once, but
like 3 times is too much.
They stop 100-foot back from the city walls. That's like, that's not like, oh, we don't want to go in the sea. That's, oh, God, we can see the city. Oh, no.
True. That is a fair point.
I will say, Mike, with the wolves, it should make sense later. So, can discount that.
How do you think Cradle would go if it was adapted? Will, do you reckon it'd be pretty?
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
More importantly, would you prefer Cradle to be adapted into live action or anime?
So anime, almost entirely. I don't. So for one thing, that's just me. Anyway, I just prefer. I think animation works better for sci-fi and fantasy properties. I just like it better. I think it looks smoother. Yeah, you don't have to have Marvel tier budget to make the special effects look organic. So I just feel like you look at the animated spinoffs and you go, okay, I think that looks smoother. I think it's got a cohesive art style. I think it looks neat. So I think, and also a lot of Cradle is anime inspired. Of course, the central thing is from Chinese cultivation novels, but there's a lot of anime influence. So I think that would be a natural fit. I would love it to get animated. My whole attitude toward adaptations really is I've never been a guy who's like looking to get adaptations because as a fan, I just always assume adaptations are going to suck. One of the reasons I've been following Wheel of Time is because I assumed it was going to be just trash garbage. I thought it was going to be terrible. I thought it was going to be a just absolute fiery disaster. And it was not. I've been enjoying it. I've been watching it. It's not Arcane, which is fantastic.
What is?
Yeah, nothing is. That's right. Yeah. So that's the height. But it's still, I never expect that either. And I love League of Legends. I was expecting that adaptation to be good because I knew that they were going to put a lot of resources into it. There was a lot of talent behind it. And I knew it was going to be good, but I was thinking like B. And that's basically the height in my head where adaptations can go. And so because I assume they're not going to be great, I have never been excited about getting an adaptation. I don't particularly, like, I'm not out there hunting for one. But also, if I got one, I would be happy. That itself would be a cool thing to me, just getting an adaptation at all. So how good it was wouldn't really concern me that much because I'm going, look, I have a definitive version of the story. It's the books. So if you want a different version that's animated or potentially, I can't imagine a live action Cradle, but potentially live action, then cool. And maybe you'll enjoy that. That should be fun. But I don't feel like that reflects on the books too much. So
I'd be like, I think that's the way I always look at adaptations. They are completely different. And, you know, they're separate from the books. They are a different story being told. Yeah, okay, you know, you can say it's the same story, but it's not, because they have to change things. There are so many things that will work in a book that won't work on live action or even animated, and the same thing can be said the other way around. There are so many things that will work live action that just don't work in a book. So, yeah, it's a completely different format and a completely different animal. You can't go into something saying this should be exactly like the books, because it won't, it can't.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And yeah, it's difficult when you are so attached to a particular book series and you kind of want it to be the same, but it never will be. And yeah, it's always a interesting battle. On a very hard tangent here, Will, going back all the way to Cradle number one, there was a massive genre twist in that book that really kind of caught me by surprise. And it's probably the scene that a lot of people mention when they're talking about it to you. And it's the scene roughly about 30% of the way through where a certain figure comes into the book that sort of totally changes your understanding of what genre it is. And yeah, kind of like changes it from being this fantasy world to being one with like almost these sci-fi elements to it. So I was just wondering if you could kind of like talk us through that in a way that isn't like super spoilery, although it is early in the book, so it's okay.
I'll spoil it.
Happens.
So I'm going to spoil it.
Yeah,
so surely everybody in the world has read Cradle by now.
Well, so it's less than halfway through the first book of what's currently a 10 book series and is going to be 12.
That's
so
fair.
I feel like, and we give Unsold away all the time, so it's like it won't take you long to get to this point. It's not, I'm not ruining a whole lot for you. So this
spoiler.
Is kind of this would be in the trailer, you know what I mean? So, I'm just gonna spoil it. But roughly a little earlier than halfway through the first book in the Cradle series, Unsold, what is effectively an interdimensional space angel comes down and kind of reverses time, right? Mm-hmm. So you go, oh crap, the scale here is a lot larger than I thought. So when I was developing Cradle, one of the things that they do in the genre that influences this, the Chinese cultivation serials that inspired this, which I say that that's the most obvious direct parallel, but there's a lot of Korean and Japanese fiction that inspired it as well. But it's this sort of cultivation genre. They often have higher realms of existence with gods. You have these Taoist immortal kind of mythology behind it. And so you have these, this, the god realm or whatever that is above them. And so I knew going into this, I was like, okay, so that's part of this. This is the whole objective of advancement or cultivation is to improve yourself and reach this higher realm of existence. So therefore I have to have a higher realm of existence that they're headed toward. And I wanted to show that early. So I intentionally arranged it in the first book so that you think you're down on the ground watching this dude come up. And then all of a sudden we ramp everything up to 11, right? And then we jump up at a effectively a sci-fi, science fantasy, interdimensional sort of like, wow, big thing. And then we pull it back down. Now, and then that experience that the main character has, having seen things from that perspective, mirrors now what the reader has, which is like, well, wait a second, these small conflicts don't matter to me anymore. And that's how the character is now thinking too. His thought process has fundamentally changed. So I structured it that way for that reason, so that your experience as a reader sort of mirrors what Lyndon has, is I wanted this to be a big thing that then motivates him going forward. His entire perspective on reality has changed. And I want you to kind of understand that as a reader. Now, I had developed the Abaddon and this whole higher level society for a different series, for an on its own series. So I had that kind of fully developed already. So that's kind of how I pulled it in. And I also wish, even though Suriel kind of did this, she showed Lyndon all the most powerful people in the world, or some of them. I wish I had made that clearer. So one of the things that, a piece of advice that people, when you're writing progression fantasy, so something where the main character is intentionally setting out to get stronger, and that's their objective, show the height of the magic system first, early. So early you show where you're headed, so that you get a sense for this is the cap. Well, the problem is the cap I showed was way too high. This isn't like the cap of the magic system Lyndon's actually working with on Cradle. This is the cap of the magic system two levels above that. So it's incomprehensible to the main, to the characters and to the reader. So therefore that was premature. I should have shown I could have had that still happen and then had her illustrate why these people can help and show off the monarchs, which are the height of the Cradle system. So that we have an idea for, oh, okay, so Lyndon's going to be able to blow holes in mountains and punch Goku or whatever by the end of the series versus reversing time and raising the dead and banishing people beyond time and space. And those are different things. So that's what I wish I had done differently with that. But I included that whole storyline or that element of the story intentionally to give the character somewhere to go and to tell the reader, hey, we're headed up and out.
That makes a lot of sense.
How much is like the success of Cradle and Unsold do you think is due to that point in the book? Because up until that point, it kind of feels like not very run of the mill, but it has a lot of your standard fancy elements of, hey, here's this farm boy essentially who's looked down upon by everyone, all that lot. And then suddenly this halfway through the book you like suddenly everything just changes, and it's the hook, that's the hook that makes you go holy crap, I've got to keep reading. So do you think that is largely that point is largely sort of like what inspired the success?
I think so. I think that's the first hint that I'm doing something different, right? That was by design. That's the okay, we're gonna settle you in. This is the just kind of the pitch of the genre, and you're like, yeah, okay, he's getting picked on by the equivalent of high school bullies. So it's like I'm not doing anything crazy with the opening. And then all of a sudden you get a peek of, oh wow, we are doing something a little differently. So I think that's definitely the first hook of the series. I think so this is another thing about listening to criticism, is there are definitely some people, not most people, but some people who read Unsold and wish we hadn't had those elements. And this whole thing had just been a very grounded exploration of Lyndon going up through the ranks and getting growing skill. And I'm like, one of the other things I wanted to say was very early, this is not going to be that. It's not what we're doing. We're getting crazy. Eventually we're taking our time to get there, but we're going to. So that was, I think that hook was responsible for a lot of unsold success. I think that was the kind of thing that people were like, oh, wait a second, what are we in for? I want to see this go further. And then Soulsmith, which I released like a month and a half after Unsold, because I did not expect Unsold to do so well. So I just very quickly wrote another book. Then I released, and I had part of that written already, but I released Soulsmith a couple months later. And it was another one where the hook is the broader world. So we have a fan favorite character, Ethan, coming in at the end of book two. And he is just a lot more fun to read. So he comes in and makes the tone of the series a lot more like it's what it's going to be coming forward. You start getting hooked there. And then when I did my reread just as a reader last year, I started feeling like book three is really where it kicks off. Book three is really where now it starts feeling like the rest of the series. So you get through book three and then it's like, okay, now we're starting. And that's probably too long. I could probably have, if I had realized that this is another one of those things about Jed asked me last week what I would tell people whose series gets popular. And one of the things is you don't know what series is going to get popular. You don't know. So nobody knows. You don't know. So I wrote this not because I thought it would be popular, but because it was what I wanted to read. I'm like, I wanted to read something based on these cultivation novels and web novels that my friends would enjoy. So that was something, it was for a more Western audience. So I was going, okay, so I'm trying to meet them halfway. And that's what I wanted to exist. So that was why I started Cradle, but I didn't know until basically two were out that it was really going to be popular. And so that's when three, I had to sit down and figure out, okay, what is this story? What is this series? What is this world? And how are we going to do it moving forward? And you get that sense from reading the third book. So I think that is what got me there. It was the hook of, hey, we are going to do something different. Don't worry, I'm headed there. But at the time, I didn't know how long it was going to take me to get there. I didn't know if I was going to be allowed that many books. I might have to skip some years. I don't know. And then in two, it was now the tone gets a little bit right. And then in three, now it's, okay, this is what you're in for. This is what you're reading. And I think that's the progression that worked for Cradle. But if I had to do it over again, and I do, then I would I would try and have book one be a better representation of the tone and content of the rest of the series. So I would try to do in book one what I did in book three, but I don't know if that's possible.
I'm not sure you need to, especially with sort of like longer series with shorter books like that. I mean, you know, each book is what, 100,000 words or something like that.
Yeah, the first three are the first two are under 100,000 words, yeah. And then most of them are just a little bit over 100,000.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's obviously going to be 12 books long. But then I likened it quite a lot to sort of like the shonen style anime and manga that you get, and they don't hit their real stride or the real tone of the show until a fair distance in. I mean, I've been rewatching sort of like Naruto recently, and it starts off as this very sort of like happy, chirpy, you know, anime about a, you know, dysfunctional kid, basically. Somewhere on the line, it starts getting a bit dark, and you start seeing more of like the character interactions. And yeah, it's a good sort of 60 odd episodes before it really starts to settle into where it's going to be going. So
that's really true. And I think that's a lot of, I mean, you're talking about Naruto. That's very true. The whole first arc of Naruto is not at all representative of the rest of the show. I mean, I really love the Zabuza arc. I think it's really good, but it's not at all representative of the future arcs. But one of the things I like about Naruto is from the very beginning, at least up to what they call Naruto and then what the anime starts calling Shippuden. So before the time skip, everything they do and every arc they do, all the characters have a personal stake in it. They have something that is really, they're going to get out. They have their own goals. They have their own emotional connection to it. They have their own personal stakes. And there's a real chance that it could go very wrong. And I really like that because it's way better organized and plotted than people realize it is before the time skip. So not including the filler. That's true. That's right. I'm really talking about the manga more than I am about the anime, just because there's no filler in that. So I really appreciate Naruto for what it did in terms of I think it was very well structured and very well focused on the characters and their conflicts for most of its early run. And honestly, that is kind of the thing that I would aim for at writing, starting off a series, is going, okay, how do I make it clear who these characters are and what they're after and what their conflicts are, and then make it feel believable that they overcame them while doing this cool thing, you know, with knives and water shurikens.
Yeah.
Aside from that tip, which I think is a good one to, yeah, make sure you're kind of clear on the tone and the overall goals of your character before you start the series. Perhaps one last question before we start to close this episode out. What advice would you give for people starting to write progression fantasy, or people who have already written progression fantasy but want to kind of up their game?
So one of the tips I definitely always have is, like I said a minute ago, show the end of your progression system early. So relatively early in your first book, as soon as you can in your first book, you want to see somebody who's a true master of the system. And I think that's probably true anytime you're introducing a magic system that has tiers, even if it's not really a progression system, as in the plot or the story of the series is primarily around main character getting stronger. I think that's just a good idea. Let's see what the most capable people are capable of early on, so that we know, so that we're framed in, right? I think that's a good, just very specific tip. In terms of people writing progression fantasy, I think for me, what I enjoy is the progression elements being a driving force of the plot and of the characters. And I enjoy this being a major thing that the characters are trying to do, because the reader wants to see the characters get stronger. So I like the characters to also want to get stronger. It just helps. But I also do not like that as the be-all, end-all of the plot. So I know a lot of there are fantasy series, progression fantasy series out there. There are a lot of web novels out there where that's all that it is. That's all you're reading. They're not trying to do anything else. They're just trying to level up. What are the steps to leveling up? How do I figure that out? And then how do I level up? I like that as a secondary element, but I don't like it as the only thing they're doing. So I prefer it to be, they're on some kind of adventure. They have some sort of objective. And in order to accomplish that objective, then they have to get stronger. And along the way, there's other things they're trying to accomplish. So they're trying to get revenge. They're trying to survive a duel. They're trying to establish a city. They're trying to do whatever. They're trying to explore a place. I just prefer it if they have some goals that are in addition to that. So I think that's important. But the main thing I would say to people is you want to write it so that it's engaging the whole time. Don't bore your reader. Just try to make it so that it is, every time they are setting out to do something, there are stakes for it, and there's a reason for the character to be doing that. And for the love of God, give your main character a personality. One determined is a personality trait, but it's just one. And so that's what I say that because that's Lyndon's primary personality trait in Cradle, is he's extremely determined to do this. He's the Determinator trope, right? But there, he's got other personality traits. He's got other things he cares about. He's got other things that make him who he is. And that comes out over the course of the series. And I think that a lot of people, when they're writing anything, including progression fantasy, it's they give the character one defining characteristic and then they don't do any more. It's like he's this, but that's it. And I greatly prefer my characters with very clear, memorable personalities. It doesn't even have to be personalities I like, just memorable, interesting personalities. And I think that's very important, especially in progression fantasy, that can tend to drift toward just a mechanical, this is how you level up, and this is how I figured out how to level up, and then I leveled up, and this is what leveling up was like, and then I used the level up to do this. And so because it can drift into that, I think it's even more important to have the characters be memorable and have strong personalities and strong reasons and drive to move forward and other goals other than just getting stronger. You're getting stronger for a purpose, for a personal reason.
A friend of mine just sent me a book to read, like a early draft. And he's the writer. He's like kind of my age. And he wrote this book about this character who really just, he wants to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And while I can relate, it's a terrible character trait for an interesting novel.
Yeah.
That I would like to be left alone is not really a motivation. So I kind of had to, you know, like slaughter his book and be like, this cannot be his motivation. He can at start, that can be like part of his character. One of his traits is like, he doesn't want to do this, but now you have to like put shit in front of him and he has to, and it can't be, he can't constantly, you can't spend the entire book trying to get out of being in the book.
Characters are right, try develop. But well, there's the different sort of like scores, isn't there? There's the you can, you're either trying to create a character within the story and you're trying to tell the story with that sort of character, or you're trying to create a proxy for the reader. And if you're trying to create a proxy for the reader, sure, you don't need to give them much of a personality, because I mean, but that's like when you play a computer game and you create you as the main character, you're a proxy that's within that world. And you know, those sorts of things can work. They can sell well. People do want them, I suppose. But I feel that if you're really trying to tell a story, you have to have the character with their own personality, their own defined, you know, goals and development within the story. Or it just comes across as bland to me, at least.
Yep, agreed.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a good spot to wrap this point up. Yeah, if you would like to see more of our chats with Will, and you haven't listened to our previous three episodes that we have done with him, go check those out. I will also try to pop a link down below so you can click on those as well to go to that. Yeah, otherwise, feel free, if you have watched all those previous episodes with Will, feel free to go ahead and share this if you have a friend who is also a Will White fan. Do you have a name for your fan base?
Oh, I don't. They might have a name for themselves that I'm not aware of.
Okay.
I don't know.
The Whiteys.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know. This tends to, the fact that my last name is White tends to make that pretty awkward. So they would have to figure something else out.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, this is something to put to the brain's trust, I reckon. Try to get it. Get a fan base name there. Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on, Will. I've really enjoyed this chat with you. I thought I learned a lot last time we talked, but this has been even more. I've written a ton of notes down here. So
my game last time.
Yeah.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Right. This is why Jed keeps inviting you on, just to mine you for information.
Pretty much. Basically what I do with all our guests. And then, yeah.
If that or to catch me confessing to crimes.
That too. That was off air, but so it wasn't recorded. Now you're on air and it has been recorded.
See, you referenced it. I could have been saying anything.
Exactly.
Now they know that you all heard me confess to that terrible crime.
That's it. So Will, for people who like haven't read any of your books, where would you say is the best place for them to start? Probably, well, I won't put words in your mouth. What would you say?
I would say Unsold, one of the Cradle series. Yeah, it's definitely where I'd direct anybody.
Yeah, it's great. Read it, loved it. And it's got me excited for the rest of the series as well. So yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Will. Thank you everybody for listening or watching. Quick shout out to our recent Patreon, Nisha, thank you for signing up. If you want to help support the show, head to patreon.com/wizardswarriorswords and you can get some cool bonuses on there as well. Also have for our next episode, a bunch of like questions from people and comments too. A quick highlight from that, Mike, which I will just bring up briefly because I know you will appreciate it, is one of our listeners, after going through our introducing readers to new fantasy worlds episode, immediately went out, actually paused the video and ordered themselves a copy of the Millennial Manifesto from Amazon. So
it has sold a copy.
We're getting there.
There are now 5 people who have read that book.
That's it.
Wow. Maybe not 5.
Probably a few more than 5. Probably a few more.
I was counting you in there as well.
Oh yeah. Wow.
That's it.
That's step out of genre and you get the kick.
You get kicked. But then later it becomes cult hit. So, you know, what can you do about it? Anyway, thank you everybody for listening or watching, and we will see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Ciao.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.